Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, or here we hope to go, or try to go, or, well, I'm here, and you're there, and this program is live. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live, and that's where you go if in fact, you would like to jump into the chat room. Oh, God. You go away for a couple of days, and things just don't seem quite, you know, right. I wonder what the cats walked across on the board today. I don't sound right in my cans. Yeah, well, we'll get through. But at any rate, this program is live. It is the first broadcast of 2017. It is the second day of January 2017. And, you know, there's something sort of ominously, ironically appropriate about the fact that the first Horn broadcast of 2017 falls on a Moran Monday. It was not lost on me. And I got a feeling that we're going to be... You know what? Moran Monday may get sort of superannuated. Is that the word I'm looking for? In the coming months and years, because it may just be... Well, you know, it's like the story about the woman who asked the question about the Hindu creation myth of where there were, it's a turtle, not creation myth, but the cosmology, where there's an elephant standing on the back of a turtle, standing on the back of a turtle, on the back of a turtle, on the back of a turtle, and the woman asks, well, what are the turtles standing on? And the answer, the reply comes, it's turtles all the way down. Well, this may be Moran's all the way down. Hard to say. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. We haven't talked since Tuesday. Because I did a terrible thing for which I am paying an awful karmic price. Okay, so Sparky says the sound is bad. Wonder why that is. What in God's name could possibly have been? I did a complete sound check before the program. I got no clue. But, I did a terrible thing. No. I don't think Sparky was saying the sound is bad. I was telling you, okay. Never mind. Okay, thank you. Don from Central PA and Texas Betsy saying sounds fine here. Thank you. Much appreciated. I did a terrible thing Wednesday. You know, as I announced on Tuesday, I was taking the night off on Wednesday to watch my beloved Mountaineers, as noted, through a crack in between my fingers and because my fingers themselves aren't cracked. But it cracked between my fingers with a blanket over my head. I know, it looks a little funny in a public place, but by the end of the night, there were people who were... Uh, wanting to borrow my blankie. Because the Mountaineers went to Orlando to whatever stadium that is and stunk up the joint. So that's all well and good, and I understood. The minute the game got out of hand, I knew why they were losing. Because I took the night off to go and watch. Now, had I just simply stayed here and maybe gotten updates from Sparky in the chat room and everything, it probably would have been a blowout. Another huge and successful Mountaineer win. But no, me, in my hubris, I had to go and watch the game. And watch I did. And, you know, I didn't feel, I mean, you know, it's a loss, so you kind of feel kind of crappy about that. But still, I came home, went to bed, and got up the next morning and felt like grim death. I should note that there were no chemical reasons for me to feel that way. And looking back on it, I'd been kind of, running. And I kind of chalked that up to the holidays and you know, lack of light and running myself crazy and constantly going. Well, turns out that's not what it was. As best as I can gather, it was a virus. And, you know, there was some upper respiratory fun, but most of it was centered elsewhere. And so it was physically impossible to do a program on Thursday. It remained physically impossible to do a program on Friday. I stayed in bed all day Saturday, and my New Year's Eve was, yay, woo. I mean, I didn't even see, I have not even watched a clip of the Mariah Carey train wreck. So that was it. And then Sunday, late on Saturday, Agnes graciously put the corned beef in the crock pot. That really, you know, for the packaged corned beef, that really is the best way to go. And everybody had corned beef and cabbage yesterday. Kind of dialed everything else back because I wasn't up to it. And so that was my party weekend. I'm not back to normal. I'm not okay, but I couldn't. 3 nights away from the mic felt like an eternity. I really do enjoy the interchange and the free flow of ideas and conversation and dialogue that we have with one another here. And as a consequence, when I'm away from the mic for very long at all, not happy. So I'm here. And I think, as Anatole in the chat room says, all I got for Christmas was the influenza. Yeah, I think I got it too. And I got my flu shot and everything. So maybe it would have been worse. Or maybe this was just a strain that they didn't take into account when they were blending this year's flu vintage. But it has not been fun. I've tried to stay hydrated, watch my blood sugar at the same time, and also, well, keep my electrolytes where they needed to be. It wasn't just the plants that were craving the electrolytes. It was me. And all of this is probably immensely boring to because of the sense of commitment that I feel related to what we do here, I wanted you to know that I wasn't out just living the life of Riley. Some thanks are due. Many thanks, in fact, are due to the people who helped keep us and this program from going miles deep into a hole. In particular, going all the way back to Thursday. John sent me a note and said, sorry you're laid up. Today I'm sending the horn $200 to cover today's expenses. We're having a show on me. Actually, as a Quaker, John says, there's something fitting to pay for silence. Well, I'll take your word for that, John, but thank you very, very much. The 29th was also John's birthday. He said, I'm just plain grateful to be up and about and healthy. And I'm very grateful for the horn and the horn community. There have been many excellent, informative conversations this past year, and everyone in our community has something valid and relevant to say and contribute. Recently, I found the comments by Andy on Obama and the election exceptional. His words were provocative, and there was some pushback. I found his comments spot on, and I fully agree with his assessment. Also, Paul's contribution about millennials and how much it hurt to compromise and bring himself to vote for Hillary, and how especially bad it felt to do that, and she still lost. I felt his anguish, and that is why I will no longer compromise and vote for the lesser of two evils. Whatever the result, we end up with evil. I vote only for people I believe in and trust. I find maintaining one's personal integrity is always a winning play. Thanks for all your fine work. Heading off to PayPal to do my part in keeping us rolling into next year. And John did exactly that. Even though there was no program on Thursday, we did have a show on me for Thursday. And others rolled in and helped. Thanks to Joy. Thanks to Randy. Thanks to Chris in the Northwest Territories. And thanks always to our subscribers. We actually had something rather amazing happen. Laurie in San Bernardino, thank you. Thanks to Jeff. All told and taken together, we actually squeaked in under the wire. And for the 12th successive month, we beat the Swede. The Swede took, our buddy Scott, took a 12-month beating that he asked for, mind you. And so we beat the Swede and came out ahead, or came out even, actually. And so I want to thank everyone who helped to make that happen. So we kind of start 2017 with a clean slate. And you know, nothing changes. It's not like the fundraising goal is going up or anything. But we try to raise $200 every evening. And as a consequence of that, we need to raise $200 this evening. 20 at 10, 10 at 20, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250. 32 at 6 1/4, or 64 at $3.13, and we'll just apply the extra half penny on that where we round up from 12.5 cents to 13. We'll put that on the Gulfstream 5 payment if you don't mind. That's a joke. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. And if you would like, and we would love it if you would, if you would like to be a part of keeping this little, and it's 2017 now, so I guess it's really honest. If you would like to be a part of supporting the resistance, because there will be no Trump collaborating here. If you would like to be part of supporting the resistance, this is a really cheap and easy way to do it. Not cheap in the no-value way, but inexpensive. Just go to headonradionetwork.com. And if you feel so inclined, click the, when you go to the contribute button, click that little box that says, make this a recurring monthly donation, and you'll be a subscriber. And you can kind of set it and forget it, and $10, whatever. Mr. Soros! Yeah, I guess you don't have to worry about the resistance, do you, George? I mean, you're insulated. You've got a fine insulating layer of billions. But still, it'd be nice if you kicked a little something over this way, George. I mean, just click the little make this a recurring monthly donation box and put in, like, you know, $10,000. Right. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, you, Mr. Soros, or anybody else, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. Let me know if you're going to use the mailbox, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne, and that way he can leave the spider-proof gloves in his truck. And he gets a little, that means he gets a little better grip on the Louisville Slugger in case he runs into the Grand Kleagle while he goes to pick up the mail. It is, and talking about whatever the hell this bug is. A lot of people have it. And it is no fun. If you haven't had it yet, use your hand sanitizer. Stay away from, well, never mind, but it, it's no fun. Just got a note from GK who says, wow, me too. Your story sounded like my own story. I was dead from the Monday after the baby Jesus' birthday. It's only now that I feel human again. So I can relate. Nothing is worse than being sick with two dogs. Not anything I'd wish on anybody. Sure, I'm glad I have that socialized sick time. Take that, you filthy voucher-hawking bastards. See, GK's got the right attitude going into 2017. And that's what the attitude will be here, too. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very kindly for getting us started this evening. $170 to go. Okay, so there are some sound issues. Matt in San Francisco says, tune in, sound is off. Sounds like you're broadcasting from the bottom of a large soup can. And it sort of feels that way, too. Nothing should be any different. No, the EQ's okay. Oh, well, old equipment. You'll have that sometimes, I guess. But really, it's 2017. And yes, there's this little bit that I mention this time every year. The idea of a new year is sort of arbitrary and very much an anthropogenic, I guess we'd say, concept. Because the Earth just rotates and revolves, and the sun goes where it goes, and we follow it. And I read somewhere that the trip through the galaxy and through the universe and such is more of a helical kind of a thing than it is a bunch of circles within circles. But we, as big-brained, hairless primates, somehow need to impose order where order is sometimes hard to come by. And so we call this a new year. And while everybody was busy kicking 2016 out the door, no, come on, no, you've been here long. No, you've overstayed your welcome, goddammit. No, you gotta, look, you already shit in our shoes and peed on the curtains. Come on, you gotta go. I hold I hold no hope that 2017 is going to be some sort of a reprieve. That's me, Bob Kincaid, little ray of goddamn sunshine. It's going to be what it's going to be. Okay, that's weird. Asa tells me that TuneIn defaulted to a lower bit rate. He said had to manually select 48 kbps. Sounds fine now. Strange indeed. Oh, by the way, happy birthday. Happy birthday to Steve in New York. Thanks, Steve, for being part of this community and making us part of your life in exchange. There's a ton to talk about. Even though it's been a holiday weekend, we are not bereft of information. Oh, by the way, courtesy of Ralphs. Hey, Ralphs. Ralph says, I'm offering a $25 challenge, and yay for beating the Swede. So, Ralph's has, Ralph's will match the next $25 that come in. And maybe we can start a match-a-lanch. Hey, there's a new one. We've never used that before. It's a $25 match-a-lanch. Do we like, yeah, wait a minute. I'm awarding myself a very tiny first cowbell of 2017 for that. Match-a-lanch. So Ralphs is starting a match-a-lanch this evening. And hopefully that will result, will come to good results. Here's a note from Up Over Down Under, courtesy of Jen in Australia. This actually goes back to Thursday. She said, hope your team won on Wednesday. We didn't. We so didn't. Jesus, we were bad. Oh, that second quarter. That second quarter was atrocious. And we really didn't get... No. Oh, God, it was bad. Oh, what? See, as a Mountaineer fan, I can tell you, we expect this. Because some teams go to bowl games expecting to play football. Quite often the Mountaineers go to bowl games, especially during the Don Nealon era, of which this was a brutal reminder, to have a real good time and find out if the bowl committee's check cleared. It apparently did. But thanks for the kind wishes anyway, Jen. But Jen asks, how will we even be able to stand the day today after the 20th? How? During W, there was something to face daily. With this vapid, uncouth, Twitter-addicted twit, how are we going to survive the minute-to-minute onslaught of craven ignorance and rank stupidity? I'm a nervous flyer. Wait, why am I being polite? I fucking hate flying! While waiting for a cab, I've been indulging in check-the-web-itis. So, Hair Plugs chooses his company's lawyer as special representative for international negotiations. And, you know, what is that anyway? I think that means he's the shakedown guy. Wait, Harriet Myers was denied confirmation to SCOTUS because she'd served as counsel to Governor Bush? What a difference a decade makes. When are more than just a few going to start calling this a fascist coup? If the GOP ban on videoing protests on the House floor when they gut Medicare and Social Security and nominating to head the EPA and eco-assassin Alec Kokhor are not indications of a coup, surely the assault on North Carolina is. Jen says, I don't think I want to return to anywhere. I can easily imagine spending years taking the train back and forth between Cinque Terre and Amalfi Coast, sipping Strega from a flask and reading Dario Fo, Italo Calvino, Primo Levi, and Umberto Eco. Please, if I return, will someone somewhere have done something to stop this madness? How will we live in any substantive way? How will we stay alive? No collaboration. Resist. And don't normalize because it's difficult to reverse it. I used to buy chicken feed from an Italian man so that I could practice my Italian. An elderly workhorse in the way only a Sicilian can be. Compact, no injury-prone long limbs with a stubborn stare that could freeze hot water. I never really knew him. We just recited conjugations and pronounced nouns with the proper emphasis on the second or third syllables. But then one day, out of nowhere, he started bemoaning the death of Mussolini. Such a misunderstood everyman. With all that we know and has been written, he still mists over in his insistent normalization of a tyrant. Just saying, once it sticks, it sticks. Jen says, yeah, I found a different stock feed place and bought Rosetta Stone CD-ROMs to practice languages. Bon voyage, Horn Family Communication, or Horn Family Community Congregation members. And in parting, Jen says, if Cheney dies while I'm on the road, please let Steve Martin know he has to play him in the biopic. And I've noticed that before. Steve Martin, now that he's an elder statesman of an actor, could play Dick Cheney in a minute with next to no makeup work. It's shocking, and I'm glad that Jen pointed that out. But it is 2017. And by the way, Steve in New York says, thank you. The Horn has given me so much more, and I'm deeply grateful. Well, here's to a lovely, lovely birthday, Steve. Ron and Raleigh says, literally, we often say that things make us sick. In your case, it seems your team literally made you sick. Now it's your hoop squad's turn. God made WVU to train the faithful. Okay? I mean, it's just where we live. And me, I've still got Alabama to root for. There's a benefit to moving around a little bit in terms of one's college attendance. So, as the saying goes, roll tide. And I mean, come on. I know, in the Horn Family Community Congregation, there are not a lot of Crimson Tide fans, but let's put it this way. Are you going to root for Alabama from an arguably racist state with an unarguable racist history of viciousness and violence? Or are you going to root for the university from another vicious racist state that actually started the fight and whose campus was formed out of the slave plantation of John C. Calhoun? You know, the guy who said slavery was not only tolerable, but a positive social good. Roll Tide, y'all. Not saying, just saying. So we got that. Kelly, meanwhile, says, I could not stand to look at George Bush on the TV, but I would be willing to kiss him on the lips if I didn't have to see the orange one ever on TV. Kelly, first, let me just say, ill. But secondly, I kind of understand. Oh, God, the one-upping begins. Steve says, maybe WVU was bad, but you weren't Ohio State bad. That was the worst I've seen Ohio State play. And it was. Jesus God, that was a beat down. I mean, that was a thumping, a whooping. And it was the first time Ohio State had been shut out since, like, Woody Hayes was in short pants. and just assaulting other little children. And it was the first time ever that Pope Urban had suffered a shutout in his professional coaching career. Steve adds that the worst part about Clemson is Clemson's uniforms are orange. Oh, shit! I forgot about that. But they'll probably be wearing their road whites, though. Because I think Alabama gets to be the home team, being the number one seed. But still, yes. Orange. Like the guy that the vast majority of people in South Carolina voted for. But also like the vast majority of people in Alabama voted for. And, you know, this broadcast comes to you from the Trumpiest state in the union. Yeah. So we got that. Ah, thank you, Scott. Scott in San Diego says, sounds fine here. Punky's on my shoulder and we're listening via internet songs on iTunes player. There is a very slight hollow effect, but I chalk that up as being an after effect of your recent virus issue. Hey, I don't think my throat's not great, but no, it doesn't even sound right in my own headphones. This is weird. I got nothing. So I'll have to do something to try to... Because nothing's different on the... Oh, Jesus. Oh, well. Oh, like I said, old equipment. Maybe we'll have an equipment fundraiser later this year. But it is. It's... It's 2017. I keep saying that. I don't recall a new year coming in where I just said, oh, but it's 2012. It's 2012. It's 2012. I mean, this is like a horror movie where you know not to go into the basement, but still, that first time you hear the chainsaw crank up, it has an effect. And I'm still pondering what it means to resist. And it's not like we're going to come up with a set of how to resist Trump. It's much more of a commitment than it is a plan. I mean, they did it to Barack Obama. Oh, Jesus, Barack Obama, goddamn, he's a neoliberal war criminal. Blah, blah. You're going to miss him. Oh, you're going to miss him. But you may recall that because they had a majority, which of course the Democrats don't. Goddamn DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, oh fuck Hillary! Sorry, Tourette's. They had a majority, which we don't. But you may recall that on the day after the inauguration, the first inauguration of Barack Obama, the Republicans got together and they formed their own resistance. Only their resistance was not for the purpose of preserving constitutional governance, you know, such as it still exists. Their resistance was more in the way of pout rage. And back in January of 2009, which I remember well, they sat down and said, we don't care if he wants to pass a bill that says kittens are cute and fuzzy. We're going to stop that goddamn thing. He's not going to do anything. We're not going to let him pass a single goddamn bill. We're going to make health care his Waterloo. Well, it kind of turned out that if health care was a Waterloo, then Obama was Wellington and not Napoleon. And so we can only hope that there are enough of us and enough of people like us in the Democratic Party. Oh, Jesus, God! No, in the Democratic Party. To mount something resembling a resistance. I mean, you know, there's going to be a shit ton of confirmation hearings coming up. I mean, C-SPAN is going to be a big party watching these things happen. We don't necessarily know what the makeup will be, I don't think, yet, do we, of the committee assignments. But for instance, the Senate Judiciary Committee, and this will be Senate heavy because of the confirmation process. The House has nothing in that. But the Senate Judiciary Committee will have to confirm Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to be Attorney General of the United States. Now, we have gone over ad infinitum and ad nauseam some of Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III's greatest hits. You know, the Klan stuff and the boy stuff. And the stuff, in other words, that's already in the congressional record. But, you know, he's continued being an asshole long after he was rejected as a nominee to the federal bench. And looking back on it, God, don't you wish he'd... you know, we don't get to see into the future. Don't you know if you could dig up zombie Ted Kennedy and say, Ted, look, I know you don't think he has any place on the federal bench, but really, he's going to be a federal judge in Alabama, and Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is not going to affect American jurisprudence much or many people's lives if he's just a goddamn federal judge, okay? Just let him have it, Ted. Because Ted, if you stop him from being a federal judge, he's going to nurse a goddamn grudge in the United States Senate for 20 fucking years. And then this syphilitic monstrosity is going to nominate him to be the Attorney General of the United States and put him in charge of civil rights, Ted. And, you know, Ted being a reasonable guy would probably, you know, that sounds like it might not be something we want to have happen there. Yeah, right. Let him be, yeah. But that's not, you know, that only happens in an alternate Star Trek universe where Ted Kennedy has a pointy goatee. And there's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. So that's going to come around, the confirmation hearings. And it's going to provide an opportunity. And there are going to be broadcast questions. There are going to be decency questions that have to arise. We haven't had questions of what kind of words can be said on TV like this since the heady days. See what I did there? Of the Monica Lewinsky, Bill Clinton cleanest hunt. Heady days. Wait, I'm giving myself another cowbell. I mean, I've been feeling poorly. I just need to perk up a little bit. Heady days. God damn. Because, see, we're going to have to, if anybody was paying attention on the Democratic side, and frankly, I wouldn't, you know, I mean, what, maybe 5-2 odds against. There was a little something that happened, back about October the 10th of bad old 2016. I just got to thinking, hey, you know, everybody opined about grab 'em by the pussy. I wonder if Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III did. And guess what? Well, he did. Which kind of explains probably why Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is the Attorney General nominee. Laura Bassett, writing for the Huffington Post back on October 10th, 2016, reported, Senator Jeff Sessions, Alla, no, Laura, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, Alla, R, Confederacy, a top Donald Trump surrogate, said on Sunday that even if the, pay attention here, even if the GOP nominee actually grabbed a woman by the pussy, as he bragged about in a leaked tape from 2005, that behavior would not amount to sexual assault. Interviewed by the Weekly Standard, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III said, I don't characterize that as sexual assault. I think that's a stretch. I don't know what he meant. Okay. Now, sexual assault is, of course, largely controlled by operation of the various and sundry statutes of 50 separate petty little nations that make up our country. So I just went running over to the West Virginia Code. Sexual assault in the third degree. Okay, that's third, a felony, and that's having sex with someone in sexual intercourse or sexual intrusion with a person who's mentally defective or mentally incapacitated, or the so-called statutory rape of when someone is underage. So, okay, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III is okay, it wouldn't be third degree. But, you know, there's also sexual abuse. Huh? Right? As well as what Republicans like to refer to as legitimate rape. Oh, wait a minute. I got to give Gerald a cowbell real quick. Because back when I said heady days, Gerald, it's Headley! There's our obligatory Blazing Saddles reference for the night. Damn straight. So, you know, here's the fun part about what Senator Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III said. I think that's a stretch. I don't know what he meant. So, and the report is, so if you grab a woman by the genitals, that's not sexual assault? Well, I don't know. It's not clear that he, how that would occur. Really, Senator? It's not clear how that would occur. Now, Trump said you grab them by the pussy. I mean, that's how that would occur. And there are issues with things like penetration, intrusion, whatever language is used. But then there's just the gropey grope, and that's sexual abuse. And here's a fun thing. That's often, in many jurisdictions, a felony too. Mm-hmm. Remember, I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. Just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the pussy. You can do anything. I think I need a Tic Tac. So, when the confirmation hearings for Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III come around, Senator Sessions, you have said you don't think grabbing someone by the pussy, and I mean, they're going to have high level policy debates in Senate offices and in the offices of the committee counsel as to whether or not that word will be acceptable. And of course, since it's going to be a majority Republican Senate, there'll be somebody there to get, I call upon the senator to recall the decorum of this august deliberative body and quit using that vulgar, filthy word for a woman's pudenda. Pudendum. Yes. Say whatever else you will, we will not be bored. No, not by a long shot. Oh, we will not be bored. But speaking of the Orange Menace, I saw another reference. Who sent that to me? It was damn cute. Sweet Potato Stalin. Oh, yes. Even though it was the New Year's weekend, the Sunday shows went on. And Press Secretary Sean Spicer was called upon to go and communicate with the press on ABC's This Week, where he got a little bit pissy. So the idea is everyone wants to talk about the tweets he sent, but I would actually focus on the action he's getting. Donald Trump is not president yet, and he's getting action, successes, and wins, both abroad and here at home. Everything he does right now, he speaks for the head of Sprint, gets 5,000 jobs moved from abroad, and everyone starts to mock him. Oh, those jobs weren't already announced. They weren't. The sales jobs have been a previous announce. These jobs were coming from abroad to America. And instead of trying to mock him or undermine him, it's time that people started to give him credit for actually getting things done, even when he doesn't get things done, and even when it's a complete, goddamned, utter, total fucking fraud. Okay, I added that last part. There you go. Poor Sean Spicer is actually having to try to make the argument that everybody has to stop mocking poor little rich boy Donald Trump and shut the fuck up and get in line. What are you going to do, Sean? Have people deported? Have them beaten up, do some kneecapping. You know they fantasize about that. You know they do. But it's going to be interesting. And it's going to be a parade of just serial prevarication by the incoming administration. They're going to lie like a goddamn rug, and they'll have a hissy if anyone calls them on it. You're not being fair. It's the Lugan press, damn it. But we've got our job cut out for us. Witness this. Gerald Baker is the editor-in-chief of the Wall Street Journal. And he went on Meet the Prestitutes yesterday. And Joke Toad asked him if he would ever, under any circumstance, describe anything that Donald Trump said as president as a lie. Baker's response?
I'd be careful about using the word lie. Lie implies much more than just saying something that's false. It implies a deliberate intent to mislead. I think if you start ascribing a moral intent, as it were, to someone by saying that they've lied, I think you run the risk that you look like you are not being objective.
So, in other words, Gerald Baker is saying that the veneer, tissue paper thin veneer of phony, baloney, bullshit, bogus objectivity is more important than actually reporting facts. And the problem here, and yes, I know, the Wall Street Journal's a Rupert Murdoch house organ, but look, other people, other news with that moment as a precedent, other national, regional, and local news operations will find what Gerald Baker said to be the fig leaf that they need to hide behind in order to normalize an administration that is going to have the same sort of relationship with telling the truth that we earthlings have with the 72-toed plasma species of Norblap 6. In other words, none at all. This is not going to be easy on any number of levels. When the right wing Congress gets the bit in its teeth, and Paul Ryan gets to really start coming after Social Security, that's going to be work, and it's going to have personal consequences for a lot of people, who may hopefully be pulled into the resistance. But even on a basic informational level, it's going to be work just to sort out the bullshit, just to call out the lies that the people whose job it is to call out the lies won't do.
As Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, re-coronated for 2017, notes, "Welcome to today's episode of Ask a Member of the Resistance. Question, how can Trump say China is raping America but make his products in China? Answer, you assume he thinks rape is a bad thing." There we go. Now, see, presumably maybe one would take Gerald Baker and say, well, okay, so maybe the reportage will be like, today, President Andy Kaufman said that, I don't know, something, that bananas are pink. Period. Bananas are not pink. Bananas are yellow. But because Baker doesn't want to talk about the moral implications of the fact that we have a pathological liar entering the White House, a man whose word is no good and whose word has been proven not to be any good, you know, not by priests or judges, but by the very people he does business with, which is why American banks won't do business with him, by and large. Objectivity will come into an even phonier and even greater hallowed space.
Well, see, we didn't call him a liar. That means we're objective. Oh, good, as long as you're objective, I mean.
Funny. Nobody had any problems hollering liar when Bill Clinton said, "I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky." In fact, they hollered liar all over the place when, in fact, it was legally arguable that he did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky, because they did not have coitus. They engaged in the giving and receiving of fellatio. See how that works? IOKIYAR. And media watching is going to be extra double plus super yummy good. Now, while I was laid up on New Year's Eve, there were lots of parties going around going on all around the country. In fact, I Benito Cheeto threw a party down at his incredibly tacky pile of bricks, you know, Mar-a-Lago. Is that the one he charged money to attend? No, really. And some people thought it was inappropriate when Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, whom Charlie Pierce refers to as Squint and the Meat Puppet. I am not a human being. I am a meat popsicle. Showed up at the party and schmoozed and greeted. And when he got called on it by former CNN anchor Soledad O'Brien, among others, well, Joe had a conniption, because that's Joe's response any time that you catch him in a great big giant howling bullshit lie. Have a conniption. He said, "We didn't party. We weren't partying. We went there to arrange an interview with Trump. What any journalist would do." Let's see, Joe. You work for NBC. NBC hires these people called bookers. Bookers reach out to people. But Joe wants to rub elbows and schmooze. So he's going to take that burden on himself, because you have to squint when you do this. He's Joe Scarborough. Mm-hmm. So it was completely innocent. And then he doubled down. He said, "You know, we didn't even go to the party. We went around the back. I mean, we didn't stay or anything. We didn't stay to the end.
And I went home and watched New Year's Eve with my kids and watched the Mariah Carey dumpster fire. Yeah, he said that, the Mariah Carey dumpster fire. There's only one problem. Hey, there's a photograph. Oh, yes, of course there's a photograph. And it's not of Joe Scarborough quietly waiting in an empty room somewhere back of Mar-a-Lago. You know, boxes stacked around and you know, a couple of folding chairs or whatever. No. It's Joe and Mika standing in a gaudy, lighted party space. Both of their faces are plain and obvious. They're both looking adoringly at Donald Trump's face because the photograph is taken from the position behind Donald Trump, so you can see the back of his weird head, and some dude in a tuxedo in the foreground holding a champagne glass while Joe and Mika are certainly not at the party and definitely not partying. Another question for Ask a Member of the Resistance. Was Moaning Joe merely arranging an interview at the Mar-a-Lago New Year's Eve soiree? Answer, if only someone could invent a telecommunications device, say, a telephone, then yes. Oops. Evidence. Yeah. So that. And that's going to become a norm. Because fawning to the crown, and remember, the Republican National Committee encouraged us to welcome our new king. Is going to become de rigueur. It is going to become necessary if one wants to have anything resembling the access that is the absolute pure China white heroine of the for-profit media. It's going to get very interesting. Installment of Ask a Member of the Resistance? How did they convince the Rockettes to perform at the inauguration? Answer: the Rockettes were promised they will not be dancing within groping range of the guest of honor. See how it works. And look, I've been thinking about this, and I all of this is fodder for conversation here in a little bit, anytime you want, really. You know, I've reached the conclusion, maybe these are alternate universes. After January 20th, I will be saying President Kaufman. On the assumption that this is all a gag that will be carried to the nth degree. By undead Andy Kaufman. But there's something else I've been giving serious consideration to. I've mentioned it before, but I really haven't fleshed it out and taken it where it needs to go. I think it's about time we really begin thinking about the obvious mental illness of Donald Trump and possible causes for it. And for me, the leading contender is tertiary syphilis. Remember back when he got caught, or I mean, there was no caught, it was a public performance, when he was perceived to have mocked a disabled reporter by, you know, shaking his head and his hands and all of that. And then when called on it, because everybody saw it in broad daylight, the Trump campaign responded by saying, nuh-uh. Well, I don't know how many of you know about the workings of syphilis, but because I had a lot of time on my hands, I started reading up. Untreated syphilis will manifest with, in its primary stages, a sore. Now, I'm not trying to ruin anybody's dinner. That's followed by a rash that can cover the entire body. Tertiary syphilis, one of the forms of tertiary syphilis, is a neuroparesis. Now, this isn't where the great carbunculous growths appear. No. A person can look perfectly normal and have tertiary syphilis. And dementia will follow. It takes about 10 to 30 years after infection for general paresis of tertiary syphilis to manifest. So, in fact, if Donald Trump has that, he got it somewhere between age 40 and age 60. What was Donald Trump doing between age 40 and age 60? Well, by his own accounts, in broadcast interviews, he was sticking his dingus in anything that didn't move and was, you know, sufficiently hot. And simpleton that he is, probably never considered that a hot babe could be infected with a venereal disease. But hot babes can and do get it. That's why in the 15, 16, and 17, 1800s, it was referred to as the French disease. You know, French hotties. I think Donald Trump has tertiary syphilis. It provides a rational explanation for his erratic behavior. Yeah, Bob, but I mean, you know, a million units of penicillin right in the tuchus with the plunger and you're cured. Ah, yeah. But you have to go and get the cure. If you're Donald J. Trump, billionaire who owns a mansion and a yacht and a plane and a golf course, and blah, 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 you just might not go get that shot. Because, I mean, the sore on your dingus, it heals, and it, and you're done. Right? And then the rash comes on. But, hey, you like to have a nice glowing tan, but you don't. There's really no place that'll allow you to sunbathe nude. So you go and either tanning bed it or you do the tanning bed and then you get it sprayed on to cover up the rash. By the way, it is possible to sexually transmit, I mean, it's a sexually transmitted disease. It's possible to transmit syphilis to an unborn child. You ever wonder why melanoma doesn't want to bring little Baron to Washington, D.C. and have him in the media spotlight constantly? There have already been reports that the kid ain't right. I'm just saying that. That's not a value judgment. But it can wreck the brain of a developing fetus. Spirochete-driven, and those are, you know, those are the little syphilis bugs. Spirochete-driven paresis brings on things like fatigue, headaches, insomnia. Insomnia? Hey, when does he like to tweet? Huh? 3 a.m.? 4? As it progresses, the mental deterioration advances, personality changes take place, and you can follow the interviews over time, and even his speech patterns change. Judgment becomes impaired, which can manifest as a real mess if you're a wealthy real estate magnate. You can do things like, creating a phony baloney university and then pretending that it really is one. Huh? You can screw up so many banking relationships that you wind up having to go to China and Russia for your funding. Short-term memory falls off. You know how they talk about how Trump's idea is the last idea he's heard? Mm-hmm. And you know what? His own family may not know. I mean, they see the erratic behavior, but they don't dare do anything about it. Euphoria. You know, like standing in front of a crowd and saying, "You know who I love? I love the undereducated." Mania. Low-grade shivering. Defects in speech. Delusional thinking. I mean, we don't even know if these were real hackers. It might have. I mean, my kid knows the cyber real good. absurd thinking, grandiose. It'll be a big wall, beautiful wall, huge, bigly. Paranoid. Delusions can include ideas of great wealth, immortality,
thousands of lovers,
unfathomable power. Eventually, the paretic dies bedridden, cachectic, and completely disoriented, frequently in a state of status epilepticus. I think we need to ponder this. Yeah, I don't know. Sparky says, I wonder who his White House doctor will be. Doesn't that physician ordinarily come from the staff at Bethesda? I mean, look, it's not impossible. You consider Winston Churchill's father, Randolph. Part of the reason that that Winnie had such daddy issues is because Randolph didn't pay him as much attention as Winston wanted, and part of the reason Randolph didn't pay him as much attention is because Randolph was too busy fucking everything that didn't move or threatened to have him arrested, and one of them gave him syphilis. And it ate his brain. Granted, it's pre-penicillin. But again, the presence of medication does not necessarily mean that one will make use of the medication, especially if one is convinced of one's studliness or if one lives in abject terror of word ever getting out that you have it. Now, what does all this mean? Well, it means that while right now the Republican Party is more than happy to have him at the head as it's described in the chat room, Hoghead saying he's the chief engineer of their gravy train and they're not about to derail it. I agree. But remember who's behind him. Mike Pence. And Mike Pence isn't just another power-hungry right white-wing conservative. Mike Pence is a millennial Christian dominionist, evangelical. He has the same sort of mindset that, say, pastor, governor, brother, diabetes, baloney, snake oil cure salesman Mike Huckabee has, and that is that God has put him where he is for a purpose. And once you've become vice president of the United States, or incoming, it's hard not to hear a little voice that sounds an awful lot like God saying,
Mike, I really need you to be president. You were meant to be president. You're going to be president. Only you can sufficiently do my will. Do you hear me, Mike?
Yes, Lord. Me, Lord. Call me, Lord.
Send me, Lord, and I shall do thy bidding.
And that is how that works.
And because Republicans are a gang of throat-slitting vipers in the first place, and if they realize that they don't need Donald Trump, that Mike Pence can do everything they want to do too, and they won't have to suffer the abuse that you know, Trump doles out, because that's one thing. Even if you're on Trump's side, he's still going to hand you that shit sandwich every once in a while and say, no, really, take a bite. Make it a big one. I insist. It might become more and more appealing to start thinking about presidential succession and that complicated process whereby they decide to just quietly get him out of the way without all the inconvenience of an impeachment. Because you know how that whole thing works. One side issues a declaration saying the president is incapable of performing the duties of his office. Then there's 30 days for the president to say, no, I'm not. Then the other side can say, yes, you are. No more president. It's a little more complex than that, but that's close enough. And so going forward, I mean, I'm not just sitting here putting this idea out there to ponder about. I think there needs to be a real campaign demanding that Donald Trump show America a copy of his brain scan, a certified copy of a brain scan. A current brain scan, a certified current copy of a brain scan, the long form version. Earther says, Donald Trump is the healthiest human in the history of mankind, with the awesomest vital goodness I've ever seen in a patient. May the next link in the evolution of the species. Believe me. Signed my doctor. I mean, Trump's doctor. Epstein's mom, right? So what would the hashtag be? Show us the MRI? Because, see, once the spirochetes have gone about the business of turning your brain into a Swiss cheese, I don't know. Do they show up? Need some medical help here. Does spirochete activity, syphilitic activity in the brain, would it show up on an MRI? Would the damage done over the course of 10 to 30 years show up on an MRI? Why shouldn't Donald Trump be subjected to such an inquiry? Had social media been around in the 80s, it very well could have been a positive force for good if people could have used it to demand that Ronald Reagan show an MRI or an EEG. Or CT, whatever. Because barely into his second term, Reagan was probably already displaying signs of Alzheimer's. And from a civic standpoint,
I mean, I'm not being a smartass about this. I'm not trying to be cute here. This idea hit me, and I started reading up on it, and yeah, I mean, my biases are probably at play here. But if one were simply a neutral observer, isn't his behavior unusual, past the ordinary quirks of human nature? I think, and you know, even if it's not syphilis, I'm convinced that there is something going on that is bad inside that man's brain. Did you catch the report that, yeah, he had some people out there helping him with his inaugural address, but he kind of ran him out of the room, and he's mostly going to write it himself in purple crayon. Don from Central PA in the chat room says, I thought his behavior was typical of an asshole Republican. Okay. So was W's. But we didn't have any problem conceptualizing the idea that W's behavior was also impacted by the fact that he was and is and remains a dry drunk. And as Hoghead points out, you don't have to be old to suffer from dementia. But since this is to be a fascist authoritarian administration, do not look for help to come from within the administration. You know how every year they issue the presidential physical fitness report. Oh, the president's fit as a fiddle. And, you know, in the case of Barack Obama, it's pretty obvious just to look at him. Oh, I know, nobody can see cancer or anything like that. But young, vital, healthy, plays a mean game of one-on-one and maintains the busy schedule of a president. Remember how W was in bed by 9 o'clock every night? So I think we need a hashtag. You know, something like, release the MRI. Or release the records. Because that could be taxes, too. But holy hell. If you were looking for another reason to be a little bit more disturbed, this is kind of it. What happens, and I don't think we've ever had to ponder this question, what happens to the guy when the guy with the nuclear codes has a brain that's been eaten up by syphilis. Just, I think it's worthy of our consideration. We'll see. Oh, hey, thanks very kindly. Kelly jumped in on Ralph's challenge for the match-a-lanch. And Kelly matched Ralph's challenge and kicked in 25 for the next challenge. Thank you, Kelly. Thank you very kindly. So that means, all told, we've got about $95 to go in fundraising for the evening. Probably about time I stopped filibobstering. And opened up the new year to conversation. You know how to, nothing's changed, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676, that's the stress line. Named after the immortal Bill Mr. Stress Miller, who would have celebrated his birthday at midnight yesterday. We remember you, Bill, wherever you are or aren't. Of course, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn, and you are more than welcome to participate. Scott and Punky write in. Resistance, confirmation process. It seems to me that resistance might best show up in the form of being absolutely sure that, say, five or six of Trump's nominees for key posts are not confirmed by the Senate. Is there a list somewhere that prioritizes them in terms of danger to our future and or their previous actions or stances? I think having and circulating such a list could help ensure that these worst of the worst go down in flames. We may not be able to defeat them all, but we should at least block the main ones who could hurt us all the most badly. And I agree. I mean, for me, the two big nasties, I'd probably rank them one and two. Number one would be Rex Tillerson at Secretary of State. Because that man has already been, the facts are already there sufficient to not confirm him. He's already in a business deal with Russian oil and gas interests, which by definition mean that he's in a bed already with that big, snuggly, lovable, huggable pooty-poot. And then second on my list would be Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Because having a man in the office of Attorney General of the United States who isn't sure if a man walking up and groping the genitals of a woman without her consent is a crime, has no business anywhere even near a county prosecutor's office, let alone the Attorney General of the United States. That's two. I'm not so sure that Mad Dog Mattis is a hill anybody needs to die on at defense. Third on my list would be EPA Administrator Pruitt from Oklahoma. If anybody ever wants to continue the notion of making water safer to drink in the United States, stopping Pruitt would be an awfully good damn start. At least from where I stand. So that's three. Now, can we stop them? Every Senate committee is going to have a Republican majority on it. And that includes judiciary and foreign relations and environment and public works. The three committees where Sessions, Tillerson, and Pruitt will have their confirmations. There's no filibuster in the committee. And I'm not entirely sure what the filibuster rules are anymore since they were changed by Harry Reid to get a few lower-level judges through. You can get what, and understand this. Trump is going to get any federal judge that he appoints confirmed. Everything short of the Supreme Court of the United States. Steve says, I'm thinking too hard. Just say he has syphilis, then pull the can you prove he doesn't have it? Probably works. Kitty in Boston says, Jesus, this is Mike Pence. Please croak that putrid VD-riddled orange bag of maggots toot sweet. Kitty says, glad to have you back, Bob. Glad to be back. Going to try to be here for the whole 3 hours. But right now, we're going to take a break and then come back and go to the phones. This is listener-supported conversation radio. We got about $95 to go in fundraising on the evening. And hopefully that'll happen sooner rather than later. And I'll be back quick as I can. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn.
Curious or confused? Get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Thank you.
15 minutes before the hour, this is The Horn, first broadcast of 2017. I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, 10cc, I'm not in love. Preceded, thanks Scott and Punky, preceded by a 1969 ad, VD is for everybody. You know, somebody had to sing that. Somebody put that on their CV. Ah, yeah, you want to sing the jingle for Kraft Macaroni and Cheese? You ever sung for any jingles before? Oh, why, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. I sang VD is for Everybody. Oh, you did! Next! Right. So, enough shilly-shallying about. By the way, thanks, BC. Show us the brain scan. That's very concise for a hashtag. That's nice and concise. Show us the brain scan. Wouldn't it be cool if he couldn't open his... Well, I mean, filters and everything, but if people started showing up, show us the brain scan. Everywhere he turned, show us the brain scan. And finally, some member of the fawning... press might finally get enough courage to say, sir, will you show us your brain scan? That would be helpful. Okay, let's run over to let's run over to line one and see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
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 Yeah.
Hello. My name's Rich.
Hey, Rich.
Hey, how you doing? I usually listen to you off and on work through Wi-Fi, and I'm never off. I'm always working when you're on. But I called. I really got one question that I kind of need answered after all this bullcrap that's went on with this election. Yeah, okay, I'm one of the guys that you're probably not in love with because I didn't vote for either one of them.
Well, it kind of depends on where you are, but you know, but we can't live there now, Rich. We got to deal with what we got to deal with.
Right, and that's my problem with the whole thing. Everybody, you know, everything, the women, the lewd remarks, the whole nine yards. I'm a pretty progressive guy. I'm probably 6-7 years older than you. I'm going to retire in a year, and I'll give you a real quick 30-second deal here. I for all my life, I voted Democratic, the vast majority, even with crappy candidates and everything else. I was a huge Bernie supporter. Went to the rally, donated to his campaign for the first time in my life. My wife worked for his campaign, the whole deal. Now, the Dems, they really didn't do anything. If they had kept their finger off the button and let it play out in a normal, regular fashion, I could have, you know, I don't know, I could have upchucked and voted for Hillary. Number one, she already lost again. I didn't like her policy. She's not a progressive. I'm an older guy. Like you said, I'm 59. I'm going to retire in a year. But my thinking with this whole thing is, and I got a kid that's 26 years old, still living at home, da-da-da, same old deal. I don't think they can affect me much one way or the other, no matter what they do to me at this point in time. My wife and son, different story. They voted for Hillary. I was totally against that. All right, the election's over. Yeah, but my thing is that I haven't heard anybody talk about, and I understand, you know, down south, it's going to be tough getting the voters and to go that way and voter suppression, the whole nine yards. But I mean, eventually, I think there's a possibility of this turning around. Maybe, you know, if I come by and I slap you in the face once, you might say, oh my God, you had a bad day, something, it was an accident this side or the other. 2-3 times after that, you're not thinking it's an accident anymore. Okay, so maybe these people will wise up. And they will vote more towards their interests. That's my hardest thing to stomach. That all the people I work with, and I work for a school system, anyhow. And a lot of them, they should be Democratic, but there's a bunch of them that aren't. And it's in their own interest. I live in Ohio. You know what they're doing here. You know, we had, oh my God, so much stuff going on here. You know, the right to work, they tried that here. I went down to Columbus. I protested. And I know it's all rigged. We were in Columbus. We drove down there about 3 hours away. I'm between Cleveland and Pittsburgh, almost in the middle. Okay, Youngstown, a suburb, if you ever heard of it.
Oh, yeah, anyway. Oh, yeah.
And so we went down there, and we waited. We finally got in for the hearing. And just to show you, you never see this stuff, the inner workings of the government, the down and dirty, the what have you, how it really goes. They were supposed to discuss it. Well, we weren't even allowed to speak. We weren't allowed to make comments. They wanted them to vote on the bill, and the Dems were the minority in the state, obviously, as you well know. They were not even allowed. They wanted them to vote on the bill, and they had not even read it yet. This is the kind of stuff that really gets me. They made changes, brought it there, wanted them to vote on it without even reading it. And they all but mandated a vote, and this is the stuff that aggravates me. But my point is, I think the American people finally get wise, even if Bill Jackson down south, the gun-toting religious morons down there, I think eventually, after it hits hard enough for people, I think people will change. Do you think there's any change? You think I'm way off base?
Let me try to boil that down, Rich. Do I think there's a chance the South can turn? I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, that's a good synopsis of the whole thing. Yeah, I think there's.
Let me take a run at that by looking backwards before we look forward. I saw a photo of my hometown, which is in northwest Alabama. And the Great Depression they were damn near eating dirt. And FDR came to town. And he arrived by rail. And there's a photograph of his motorcade going down the main street. And I think everybody in three counties is on either side of that street. In the modern era, it would have driven the Secret Service absolutely bananas. There were people on, 50 deep on either side of the street. Not 50, but I mean, just jam-packed. Every available window had two or three people hanging out of it. There were people standing on roofs to see him, okay? And there are even some, if I recall correctly, there are even some black faces in that crowd. But the thing is, those are the great grandparents of the people who ran out to vote for Trump. And the reason that they, and of course FDR was a Democrat, and it was a Democrat state at the time, but they were not there for FDR in those numbers because of party politics. They were there because he had sworn to bring them relief in a brutal crisis. Okay? The stock market crashed in 1929. FDR was elected in November 1932, didn't get to take office until early in 1933. And did so on promises of help. Now, if this country gets in that kind of a mess again, I think it's possible. And of course, I've heard a lot of people saying over the years that there's it's kind of like predicting earthquakes. Oh, that 6.0, there's one coming that's going to make that look like nothing. And, the thing with economics is that when people's bellies rumble, their heads will learn. So, but it is a different time. It's a different dynamic. And I'm afraid that it's going to take a grave shock to the system. And even then, with the modern media structure we have, Rich, I don't know if you necessarily get that kind of dynamic taking place again.
Okay.
I mean, the crowds in that photograph for Roosevelt were like the crowds that Trump was drawing. But to draw a greater probably a more apt parallel, the crowds in that photograph of FDR going down the street were similar to the crowds that Bernie was drawing.
Yeah.
So it could happen, but there's so many things that need to happen, or would have to happen before it can, that it's nothing that I would count on. Not in this lifetime.
And I know what you're bucking down south. I mean, it's been a long time, but I lived in Houston for 3 years. And my first night there, when I drove in after driving 26 hours to get down there, I go into Dave's restaurant to get something to eat, and I order something, and some moron, Hilljack, whatever this guy was, he yelled, "I think I smell a damn Yankee." That was my introduction to Southern Ribbon.
Oh, don't be so. Look, they're still driving around with the "Forget Hail" bumper stickers with the old Confederate on them around down there. They're still driving around. I was thinking the other day, Rich, about the first time I ever saw a "Get Us Out of the UN" bumper sticker, and I think it was before I even got to first grade. And they're still, after like the Israel vote, on the criticism of the settlements in the occupied territories, it boiled up all. We need to get out of the UN and let them bastards move to The Hague and withdraw our funding and withdraw our participation. It ain't nothing but a commie front organization. So, those old John Birchie reactionaries,
haven't changed a lick. It's just that they've actually gotten more power.
I get that 100%, but I don't believe that the youth. You got a kid that's a little younger than mine. They're a lot more responsive. They're a lot more open-minded than my generation, your generation, the one in between. The baby boomers have really screwed this whole deal up. And I think they'll make a change when they reach a little more maturity and you get more of them.
Yeah, but what? But are you expecting those? Because somewhere along the way, there's going to have to be a few more blue states added, Rich. And I can guarantee you that here in the Trumpiest state in America, the young people are no different than the old ones. They say this. I mean, there's a minority of. Let's put it this way. The progressive young people say and believe the same things that the progressive older generations do here. But the vast majority of people here, nope. They are Trumpy from the cradle to the grave.
Wow. Hey, I don't want to take a ton of your time, and I do appreciate your comments. I appreciate your show. Thanks for taking my call. I don't do Skype or anything. I just called in on a lark just to see if you'd answer. Kind of like when I call my wife, but she picks it up and she sees who it is.
Yeah, well, it's like when I wake up in the morning and go, damn, I'm the luckiest man on earth. You're still here. Well, Rich, you have a good evening. I'm glad we talked, and I hope it won't be our last.
Me also. You have a great new year. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye now. Rich calling from Ohio. Let's keep it going. Oh, my goodness. Could it be? Possibly. Is it? Is that you, Tracy?
No, it's Rick. How are you, Bob?
Rick, you're in the wrong damned area code.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm in the same area code as ever, man.
No, I got an 818 going here.
That's what I am.
You're never 818.
I'm at home. It's a holiday.
Ah! Okay.
Yeah. Usually you see the 310. That's my work.
Yeah. See, here in the 304, you got to drive an hour and a half at least in any direction to get into another area code.
Oh well, here it takes like 20 minutes, maybe. You know.
Yeah.
Not very long at all.
Yeah, just a little jaunt down the 6 7/8, and there you are in 310.
Yeah. Here, let me turn the radio off here so I can watch the game here. I've got an update on the Rose Bowl here.
I was going to say, yeah. Can you give me a score?
Yeah, it's Penn State fell behind 13-0, and they've stormed back.
Really? On USC? Rick, where'd you go, Rick? Rick, you weren't supposed to hang up your phone. You were supposed to turn down your radio. Rick? Oh, Rick. Technology. I freaking adore it. Okay, call dropped. How do you like that? We know that Penn State fell down early 13-0. Whoa! Okay, there's the... VT Blom in the chat room. 42-27, Penn State. Wow. That's going to sting. Okay, let's see. Is it working any better now, Rick?
Yeah, let me just step away from the radio. How does that sound? That
yeah, better? What did you do?
I don't know. I tried to turn off my speaker that was, your show was going through. Maybe that was because I was on the call on the Skype line. I don't know.
I mean, you're on a real phone, right?
I'm on a real phone, yes. I don't know what happened exactly. So it's not like I was just...
Okay, so I just found out that USC just scored, so it'll be 42-34?
Oh, well, I guess I have 42-27, but I'm on DirecTV, so they probably scored this next play here. There we go. Touchdown pass. Okay. It was about a 10-second delay.
Hey, what's the skinny on your Hawkeyes?
God, they were horrible. Oh, man. 30-3.
I know. Well, no, I know. I mean, that's why I asked. I mean, it's let's see. It's double plus painful for WVU fans, Iowa fans, and Ohio State fans.
No kidding. No kidding. You know, what happened, I think, is the Iowa couldn't, you know, they couldn't score once they were in, you know, close to the goal line. And, you know, there was a key goal line stand early in the game when it was like 3-3, and the, you know, the Hawkeyes were, actually, it was 3-0. Hawkeyes were down, and they had to settle for a field. Oh, no, I'm getting my drives confused. It was 3-3, and they were going to, you know, if they scored, they would have gone up 10-3. And that was like the furthest penetration they had into, you know, enemy territory the rest of the game. So after that, and then their quarterback, another time they were driving, well, actually, that was the time they were driving. And their quarterback came up lame, Iowa's quarterback, trying to score on third down, third and goal, and then they were stopped on fourth and goal. And so after that, you know.
After that, it was over.
Pretty much so, yeah. The guys, he had a bad hamstring injury, his right hamstring, C.J. Beathard. And, you know, what can I say? It was ugly, you know?
Well, no kidding.
And they left him in too long. They should have, like, it was clear the guy couldn't run. You know, he threw an interception and tried to run down the interceptor and couldn't. He kind of came up lame doing that. And they kept him in, like, until, like, 2 minutes were left in the game. Then they finally put in their, you know, second-string quarterback. So, I don't know. I was kind of shaking my head there, but just gave up too many big plays. It's one of those things, you know? So, anyway, sorry to hear that you got sick.
Oh, still am. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. There are there are reasons for six-minute bumpers, okay?
There you go. That's right. Well, at least you don't have spirochetes, right? Could be worse.
Yes.
Oh, I like that. Show us your brain scan.
Long form, damn it.
That's a good one.
Long form.
Yeah?
Yeah, show us the long form brain scan.
Oh, there you go. Exactly. Yeah, we ain't seeing anything from this administration. It's going to be one of the most secretive ever. I mean, it's going to make Nixon's look open, you know?
Yeah, but we got some brand new Nixon news. I guess you saw that. Old Nixon news.
Okay.
Yeah, it turns out that they found some squirreled away notes from H.R. Haldeman.
Okay.
And it pretty much formalized the fact that, yes, indeed, Richard M. Nixon, candidate Richard M. Nixon in 1968... in October 1968, deliberately monkey wrenched the peace negotiations with the North Vietnamese.
Oh, I'd heard of that. Yeah.
Everybody. Everybody sort of knew it. This is direct what historians call primary source.
Like a smoking gun.
Yeah, and there's even reference in there to Henry King Kissinger. Remember Henry King Kissinger? The guy that, you know, see, this is one of those moments, Rick. I voted for Hillary, but I remember saying, you know, even if you think he's a great old guy who tells does a wonderful dirty limerick, you don't need to be standing on a debate stage saying, I've been praised by Henry Kissinger.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
The handwritten memo even references Henry Kissinger's role in it. And the first thing that popped into my mind is, okay, the universe must have kept this evil old bastard around for a while for a reason. Can we please finally put him on trial? Just ship him to the Hague and tell Chile and Argentina and Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia to take a number, but everybody's going to get a shot.
Well, you know, he could live another 5 years, so that might be worth it, you know?
I mean, when I think, okay,
When I think about the fact that it is possible that maybe the Vietnam War could have been over by 1969.
Oh, yeah.
How many American names on that goddamn wall? I'm sorry, I don't mean there's anything wrong with the wall.
No.
But how many names on that wall wouldn't be there?
Probably 30,000, Bob.
You know, and given the average amount of blood in the average human being, how many tens of thousands of gallons of blood did Richard Nixon just pour over his head and bathe in?
Yeah. Well, so much for him being a Quaker, huh? And being kind of pacifistic, huh?
Well, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
It reminds me. One of the actors that wasn't mentioned a whole lot, who we lost. Well, we didn't lose him. We know he died last year. Mm-hmm. Played in one of my favorite comedies, The In-Laws. And The In-Laws came out in 1979, which is just, you know, a few short years post Nixon, and I couldn't help thinking, right, when you know, given the timing, that it had to be a Nixon jab when they had his character, a Latin American dictator, say the following.
I am a pacifist by nature, with a deep Quaker belief in the sanctity of human life. I wish I had the choice but to kill you.
Kind of Nixon in a nutshell, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. That is. Wow. Wow. Who was that actor?
Richard Libertini.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't familiar with him.
Oh, he played a lot of wonderful character roles over the years. Do you remember the Lily Tomlin, Steve Martin vehicle, All of Me?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Where her soul gets trapped in Steve Martin's body. Yeah. Well, Richard Libertini was the Tibetan holy man who kept saying, put the soul in the bowl. Put the soul in the bowl.
Okay. Okay, I think I
can. He was Chevy Chase's newspaper editor in Fletch.
Okay. Okay, like a character actor is what you're talking about,
yeah.
Basically.
I have a deep Quaker reverence for the sacredness of human life. I wish I had a choice but to kill you.
Jeez. Yeah, I tell you, we have a hell of a storm coming, Bob. You know, I mean, I think I kind of agree with your ranking of which nominees of Trump to oppose. You know, in the order, pretty much the order. Although I might put Sessions at the top, but he and the proposed Secretary of Oil are about the same. You know.
Well, I mean, I think my personal preference would be Sessions, just because I have despised him for so very long, Rick.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. But in terms of the national good and any hopes we have of not being transformed into a full-blown fascist state, mm-hmm, says Tillerson needs to be. But then, you know, just like I said, talking about Sessions' nomination as a federal judge.
Yeah.
Remember, if you stop the Sessions nomination, or if you stop the Tillerson nomination,
mm-hmm,
it's not like Trump's going to go, oh, okay, I guess we'll just have to get along with that one.
No. No, in fact, the next choice might even be worse.
No, yeah, he'll throw a tantrum and give you a straight up goose stepping, stiff arm salute and fucking Nazi.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, and
okay, yeah, you know, you don't want. Let's see, you don't want Jeff Sessions for Attorney General. How about Chris Kobach?
Oh God! Oh geez.
Ha! See how it works?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's why Mike Pence is his impeachment insurance, you know?
Yeah, but the more I think about it, I think he's not.
Really?
No, no. Mike Pence is Trump's Cassius.
Okay.
Remember the line the line about Cassius in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar?
I think so.
Cassius Cassius has a lean and hungry look.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that line now. Yeah.
Hmm. And what he would do, but again, I think there will eventually develop some appeal, because you remember the end of William Manchester's The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich?
The book?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I haven't. I don't.
Hitler.
I've read it.
812. Who had 812? This one's on me.
Oh God!
Damn it, Gerald.
Can't I get some of that pool, Bob? I'm just itching to get in there, man. I need some of those winnings.
Gerald's got the algorithm. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Hitler hated smoking.
Okay.
And so when word spreads that he was dead, you know what everybody in the bunker does? They light up.
Lights up the smoke. Yeah, yeah.
And to that extent, yeah. And that's because he, you know, it's not like he was nice to his friends and mean to his enemies. He was shitty to everybody.
Right, right. Equal opportunity shithead, basically.
It's kind of like the story of Don Blankenship. Throwing his McDonald's breakfast back in the face of his maid because she brought him bacon instead of sausage, or vice versa. It's a real story.
I'm not surprised.
And the same level of petty vindictiveness, of course, obtains with Trump. And eventually, even the sycophants are going to get tired of it. A bootlicker eventually gets tired of the taste of shoe polish.
Yeah, the mouth gets awfully dry too.
And depending on look how erratic Trump has been here now before he even gets in office.
Well, he basically got rid of. He's gotten rid of. He's axed Christie, Giuliani, and a third guy. They were his most loyal supporters. You know.
But
I'm trying to remember who the third guy was.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at. Look at how bizarrely erratic his behavior is now. It's mm-hmm. not going mm-hmm. to get better. It's going to get worse.
That is true.
And even the people who fawn around him will eventually get disgusted with him. The question is, will his behavior get disgusting enough and bizarre enough and insane enough that they'll eventually begin to mutter amongst themselves and say, you know, we got to go. It's time to trigger the Constitution.
Time to exercise our 25th Amendment remedies, right?
Well, 25th and 12th, kind of, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, the 12th. Let's see, the 12th is... what is the 12th?
Let me call it up here. I don't want to talk off the top of my head.
I haven't looked at that lately, yeah. Because I know the 25th is basically when the president's disabled and, you know, basically the vice president can... The vice president and the majority of the cabinet can declare the president unfit, and then the president has a chance to respond, and, you know, that whole thing. The 12th.
Well, that's the electoral. That's the electoral college and all of that. So.
Oh, okay. That's really
not applicable.
Yeah, we've crossed over that bridge already. Unfortunately, you know, I never held up.
Yeah, that barn's burnt.
Electors. Yeah, exactly.
But the 25th Amendment, and it really is, in a way, it's an alternative to impeachment.
Right. That's true. And I don't think we can count on the Congress to do anything with regard to impeachment. You know?
No, you really can't. Again, unless, you know, he goes full Caligula.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, if he brings a horse into the Senate, as our buddy Joy has pondered from time to time, and makes the horse a member of the Senate, there will be a number of United States senators who say, I am proud to welcome Mr. Ed to this august deliberative body.
But what state would Ed be from, though?
I mean, McConnell, Cornyn, whoever replaces Sessions, Georgia Senate delegation, the South Carolina Senate delegate. I swear that is going to be the finest four-legged senator we have ever had in this here great and august country, in this great and august liberative body. I welcome Mr. Ed. Welcome, Mr. Ed. Come and put on the feed bag when he once for yes and twice for no.
Oh, God.
But there are others in the Senate who might be a little bit put off.
Yeah, you would think so. So did Caligula have the whole spirochete thing going on, you think?
Well, you know, it's really interesting. The historical sources are not quite contemporary, but they rely on sources that no longer exist. And it is said that, first of all, and his name was Germanicus. Mm-hmm. Caligula was his nickname from when he traveled around the Roman military camps with his daddy, whose name was Germanicus. And Caligula means little boot.
Okay.
Which is kind of like calling him Chip off the old block.
Okay, yeah.
Because his daddy was much beloved and had to be bumped off by Tiberius to keep him from becoming emperor.
Right.
Let's not get into that soap opera. But Caligula was loved, and he came into office, onto the throne, as it were, and was okay, but there's a report that he had a terrible fever.
Hmm.
And when he awoke from a fever, he realized he had become a living god.
Oh, geez.
Now, this is the kind of delusional thinking that accompanies the onset of a mental illness from syphilis or any other number of sources.
Yeah.
But there's another lesson to be learned from Caligula too. And I think it's kind of frightening to ponder it. Julius Caesar gets assassinated. Then there's a period of civil war that eventually shakes out with Octavian, Caesar's grandnephew, becoming Augustus. Okay? He reigns for a very, very long time and imposes the Pax Romana and puts up a veneer of traditionalism and good Jupiter-fearing Roman family values. But all the time, there's still talk of, you know, we got to get the Republic back. We got to take our country back.
Mm-hmm.
So he shuffles off the mortal coil. His wife probably poisoned him so she could put her son Tiberius on the throne, having already gotten Germanicus out of the way.
Okay.
Well, Tiberius goes insane eventually, and that's how Caligula comes along. Still, there's talk about, you know, we really got to restore the Republic. I mean, we got to get back the powers of the Senate and the people of Rome. SPQR, baby, you know? So they bump off Caligula, because Caligula goes, you know, it gone.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so once he's dead, it's like, okay, Republic's back. Power's back in the hands of the Senate. Power to the people, y'all. And the Senate cannot wait. It cannot move fast enough to acknowledge Claudius as the incoming emperor. They had an opportunity to stop empire in its tracks, but they didn't want to. They didn't want that responsibility. It had become quite easy, you know, as long as the emperor didn't lose his fucking mind, to, you know, just go along and get along. And that's kind of...
Maybe money was good, too.
And maybe that's...
Much money, too, maybe.
Yeah, but that's kind of where we are. The Congress,
yeah,
the Congress has abdicated, you know, in 2003, the Congress completely abdicated its right to declare war.
Right.
And, you know, right. Robert Byrd told him as much.
Right.
Now, something that might be kind of fun to bring up. You know, here at the Horn, we tend to stay pretty well out in front of the for-profit media. And I put another one in the Horn Win column today.
Okay. Let's hear it.
Paul Krugman published a column, and the copy editor headlined it, America is now a Stan.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know how long we've been referring to the U.S. You know, states in the U.S. You know, Alabama, Mississippi, Stan, 3-4 years at least.
Oh yeah, well, other progressive shows are referring to it as stands now, like Indiana Stan and Texas Stan, and you know, Norman Goldman does. You know, so
happy to help, Norman.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, Norman. I've told Norman to listen to your show, so we'll see. I'm sure he's got a lot of other things going on, but he's a good guy anyway. But
I know.
Yeah. So that's great. That's great.
But it's there. You can find it at NewYorkTimes.com or NYTimes.com even now. It's America becomes a Stan.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's actually some. There's some text there that is worth mentioning.
All right.
And all I have to do is get to it.
So I take it has to do with economically it's become a stand.
No, it's not. No, he doesn't weasel on that. He doesn't. No. Actually, and you know, for the very same reasons that we use here.
Okay.
He cites the fact that Trump's foundation, that gave very little money ever away to charity, did, however, spend $20,000 on a 6-foot-tall portrait painting of Trump, and Krugman compares that with the predilection of the Stan states to put up great big heroic statues of their little tin pot dictators.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like the leader of Uzbekistan, I guess he's been in power for like 25 years or whatever, and I think his health is failing. At least it was a few months ago, and there's no succession for him, you know? So they're going to, like, who knows what's going to happen to, you know, Uzbekistan, you know?
Krugman says, but this debacle didn't come out of nowhere. We've been on the road to Stanism for a long time. An increasingly radical GOP willing to do anything to gain and hold power has been undermining our political culture for decades. People tend to forget how much of the 2016 playbook had already been used in earlier years. Remember, the Clinton administration was besieged by constant accusations of corruption, dutifully hyped as major stories by the news media. Not one of these alleged scandals turned out to involve any actual wrongdoing. And now, parenthetically, I'm sure Krugman couldn't get away with it, but when he says dutifully hyped as major stories by the news media, it should have said paren, including this one, close paren. But he says people also tend to forget just how bad the administration of George W. Bush really was, and not just because it led America to war on false pretenses. There was also an upsurge in cronyism, with many key posts going to people with dubious qualifications but close political and or business ties to top officials. Indeed, America botched the occupation of Iraq in part thanks to profiteering by politically connected businesses. Remember the $30 Halliburger?
Remember Halliburton charging $30 for a hamburger to the troops? Did I lose you again, Rick? Yep, I lost Rick again. But Krugman concludes, the only question now is whether the rot has gone so deep that nothing can stop America's transformation into Trumpistan. One thing is for sure. It's destructive as well as foolish to ignore the uncomfortable risk and simply assume that we'll all be okay. It won't. It's pretty potent. Welcome to the realization there, Mr. Krugman. Glad you could finally join us. Too bad you spent an entire election season, a primary season, trying to turn Bernie Sanders into a commie. Oh, well. But either pro-Bernie or pro-Hillary, I guess we've gotten to the time where, I mean, that's over. That phase of the struggle is over. The new struggle is not political, but existential. And that's fact. And a frightening fact. Oh, thank you very kindly to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus. She's such a good girl. We now have only 100, or we only have $80 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you very much indeed. That's very helpful. And maybe the match-a-lanch will continue. You know, PayPal, headonradionetwork.com, or U.S. Postal Service. Either way. Oh, what else? What else? Couple of things. I mean, it's more in Monday after all, right? We can't just be completely consumed in grim morality. Can we have some? Different morality, because I got one. Remember when the little kid crawled over and got Harambe killed last year? Well, we've got our first stupid people, not stupid animal story. It comes out of Thailand and the Khao Yai National Park, where a 41-year-old French woman and her husband were wandering around in said national park, and lo and behold, because these things happen in places like, you know, Thailand, they wandered into the neighborhood of a great big, real, no kidding, female crocodile. Now, what did the French couple do? Did they A, very slowly back away until they got far enough that they could sprint? We're going to go straight to D, walked over and knelt next to the goddamn crocodile to try to take a selfie with it. No, really. The New York Post reports the couple squatted down next to the crocodile, which then reportedly sank its teeth into the woman's thigh as the picture was taken. Ooh, live action selfie. Maybe if they shot it with an iPhone, that means that they've got, you know, a second or so before the chomp and a second or so after the chomp.
rescuers then carried the French woman away. And this being Morin Monday and everything, let me just say that I cannot tell you how happy I am for this not to be an American couple. For this not to be an American couple from West Virginia. It's a reminder that the world still has room in it all over the globe for stupid people. Now, after chomping the woman's thigh, the female crocodile was apparently not hungry. Because she just turned around and wandered off into the brush. No word here indicating that the crocodile has been hunted down and slaughtered because it did what crocodiles do. Of course, I would be remiss if I didn't note that there are signs all over that Thai National Park that tell visitors to stay on the paths and not be wandering through the thicket. Which is, of course, what the French couple had done.
Oh, mon Dieu, ma Marie, a crocodile. Let us take a selfie with it.
Chomp. I know. James writes and says, Harambe, kids are going to be kids. That gorilla's dead because of an architect. True. True. Oh, and by the way, before we could get 2016 out the door, it took out William Christopher. Thanks for the reminder, soapbox geezer. William Christopher, Father Mulcahy on the MASH TV series, was 84 years old and died of cancer. But we're not out of Morans. Oh, hell no. We've got a Maine Moran. Yes. We squirtingly do. High quality, restaurant quality Moran. Let me see where I've got him tucked away. He's special. And also, the story includes one of our longtime favorite concepts, namely, the gun just went off. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, guns do that. I mean, this one has all sorts of all the goodies. It's got the gun just went off. It's got a Darwin Award nomination in it. It's got the goddess of irony, just fluttering all around it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll be there in a moment. It's kind of a booger when the computer stops cooperating. Let's see, come on. Sorry, it just takes a minute. Dadgummit. Oh, I hate it when this happens. That's as far back as you're going to let me go, huh? All right, let's try it this way. Gonna have to do it a different way. Dadgummit. There he is. Sorry it took so long. But there he is. M.D. Harmon. Now, I don't recall ever reading anything that M.D. Harmon wrote, but he is described as a conservative columnist with the Portland Press Herald of Maine. Well, M.D. Harmon is now pining for the fjords. 71 years old, M.D. Harmon, back last Wednesday at his home in Sanford, Maine. There was a 16-year-old boy there. And, you know, when you say 71-year-old right-wing white conservative and there was a 16-year-old boy there, there's a possibility that story can go in a couple of different directions. And maybe did. But in this case, there was a 16-year-old boy there with a 71-year-old man who wrote in 2013 of a piece of legislation proposed in the Maine State House requiring gun owners to take a firearm safety course. Told you, goddess of irony, gonna have to sacrifice a whole crate of rubber chickens come midnight. Well, M.D. Harmon took up the powers of the pen, because the powers of the pen are mightier than the sword, and he lit into that bill. He didn't want nothing to do with it. He wrote, "So much for the right of the people to keep and bear arms. It's one thing to have the government create limited groups of people not entitled to own firearms for good reasons, felons, the insane, children, etc. And quite another to have the government think it can require that a free people get official permits to exercise their rights." What a permit. It was a simple suggestion that if you're going to keep an engine of death in your fucking house and own it, that it would be wise to go to class and actually learn how it works and the consequences of not handling it, keeping it, using it in appropriate fashion. And so it was that last Wednesday, M.D. Harmon, with a 16-year-old boy at his house, said, "Come over here, son. I want to show you my freedom pateka." And hands the kid the weapon, who, because M.D. Harmon was so worried about the government putting its jackbooted jackboots down on his freedom-loving neck. The kid didn't have to take a firearm safety class. I mean, see, we've still got an assault on freedom here in this country, in this state. If you want to go hunting, you have to take a hunter safety class. Mm-hmm. You have to learn the rules about hunting. And some of that includes rules about how to handle a firearm. Well, M.D. Harmon said, "Ah, she's a real..." Wait, I've turned M.D. Harmon into a redneck, haven't I? "She's a real beauty. Here, son, have a look." "Oh, okay, thanks, Mr. Harmon." Bang! No more M.D. Harmon. Both the teenager and his father were visiting Harmon for undisclosed reasons, and Harmon's wife has called the shooting an accidental tragedy. He spent some of the precious finite time on this planet pinning jeremiads against President Obama over the fatwas that Obama issued against firearms, even though Obama never issued any fatwas because, well, Barack Obama would have to be, you know, a Muslim. And not just a Muslim, but like an exalted high 32nd degree Muslim to issue any fatwas. I'm sorry, perhaps that's fatwa. I told you. And the gun just went off. Hate it when that happens. I mean, you can't laugh about it. And more pitifully, the 16-year-old. The Portland Press Herald wrote, "The circumstances under which the gun was introduced is still under investigation, according to Steve McCausland, state police spokesman. It is just one of the many questions we have." They're going to do an autopsy of M.D. Harmon's body. I think they'll find that he was killed by a gunshot wound. Graduate of Bowdoin College in 1967, which has a long and prestigious reputation. Served in the U.S. Army, 67 to 69. Vietnam veteran, Army Reserve, 70 to 75. One may, I think, safely presume that he, M.D. Harmon, knew how to handle a firearm. Except for the fact that part of knowing how to handle a firearm involves not handing firearms to 16-year-old kids who don't know how to handle firearms, in large part because you have inveighed against classes that would teach 16-year-olds how to handle firearms. M.D. Harmon was greatly worried about his freedom protector. 1993, he wrote, "I view threats to that freedom as seriously as I do threats to my right to vote or speak freely or worship as I please." And he was a lifelong member of the National Rifle Association and apparently never heard of the NRA's much-vaunted Eddie Eagle program that encourages children not to accidentally shoot people with guns that they just see lying around.
noted Republican moderate Senator Susan Collins, said,
I was saddened to learn of M.D. Harmon's tragic death. For four decades, M.D. Harmon was a dedicated editor and columnist. His passing is a loss to his family and friends, his colleagues, and to generations of readers across the state.
I guess when you're issuing, putting out a statement like that, you don't reference the fact that, you know, he was killed by his own fucking stupidity. He was 71 years old when the goddess of irony called him home. As it used to go on CNN.
M.D. Harmon, dead at 71. Sandy Kenyon, CNN, Hollywood.
We used to sit back in the edit bay and just wait for the Sandy Kenyon, CNN, Hollywood obits to show up. Journalism will make you jaded after a while. Let's check the mailbag real quick. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Rick. Billable Rick just got us to within $50 of tonight's fundraising goal, continuing the match-a-lanche. Thank you, Billable Rick. And he said, sorry about the rude termination of our call. We can thank my internet phone provider for that failure, Charter Communications. Happy New Year and get well soon. Thank you, Rick. I really hope I do get well soon, because this sucks. GK says, laugh, no, but sad, sure. But at least the dipshit lived his poisoned life, such as it was. Look, remember he considered his Second Amendment rights co-equal with his right to choose my place of worship. I'm pretty sure he was not a Sikh, okay? He was probably a follower of that religion whose avatar taught the following. Put up thy sword into his place, for those who live by the sword shall die by the sword. Yeah, but Jesus didn't say nothing about no Glock 19. Let me make it a little easier for you, Cletus. Though put up thy Glock 19 unto his place, for those who live by the Glock 19 shall die by the Glock 19. Oh, and I mentioned all the business with Joe Scarborough earlier. Just a little bit of a follow-up as we wrap things up for the evening and I get ready to get back on the road to go and do the evening commute. Oh, wait. Hoghead in the chat room says, I was raised by a USMC drill instructor. I was never handed a loaded weapon by him. Well, right. Oops, sorry. I made a Cletus reference, and Steve from Georgistan says, easy, Bob. Cletus is scratching my leg. Hello, Cletus. Did a good girl. And that was, it is possible to be, accidents will happen, but it's possible to be a sane gun owner. And if you are going to show someone your freedom protector, so over in Second Amendment land, they like to show each other their guns because it's not socially acceptable to unzip their flies and compare very tiny penis sizes. But there's a way to go about it. Rule one, make sure the firearm is not loaded. Rule two, never point the muzzle of the firearm in the direction of any human being who could be hit by a bullet from same. Rule three, which is actually rule one,
always assume a firearm is loaded. I mean, what's the... Okay, so the boy and his dad were at the guy's house. What purpose is there in showing a man's 16-year-old son your firearm? I'm not kidding. I'm just, you know, kind of stumped. Note coming in from Scott. Putting a number on Nixon's dead in Vietnam. You asked about how many more U.S. troops were needlessly killed in Vietnam because Nixon sabotaged LBJ's possible settlement in order to con his way into the presidency. It is a sobering thing to consider that by the end of 1968, the U.S. death toll in Vietnam stood at 36,956. That November, American voters bought into the notion that Richard Nixon had a secret plan. I've got a secret plan to end the conflict if the people would but vote for him. They did, and before our Vietnam misadventure was over, another 21,293 Americans would be lost. I would edit that to say, would be killed. Nixon, Scott continues, Henry the K, et al., ultimately gave us those 21,293 additional names on the wall. Names that represent 21,293 lives and futures that might have been spared had voters not been so easily and willingly fooled. Now, in 2017, we may well be facing, as Yogi Berra once noted, deja vu all over again with Trump. Signed, Scott in San Diego, with his little feathered statistician, Punky the Cockatiel. Punky worked that out on an abacus. He's great that way. It's a grim damn thought with which to close the program. Almost 22,000 human beings. Well, that's sobering. Hey, thanks, Keith. We are only $40 away from finishing fundraising for the first evening's broadcast of I thought if we're going to talk about the Nixon thing, thought it might be beneficial to note the actual words. John A. Farrell writes on New Year's Eve, 2016. Now we know Nixon lied. Now see, the Wall Street Journal would never print that. Because that, to say that he lied, that implies a certain moral judgment, and it's a violation of our objectivity. But Nixon's dead, so you can say he lied. I wonder if it'll take as long for, news organizations to say that Trump lied, you know, about anything, because he lies about everything. So H.R. Haldeman has taken notes.
Haldeman writes, keep Anna Chenault working on South Vietnam. Any other way to monkey wrench it? Anything Richard Nixon can do. Farrell writes, Nixon had cause to lie. His actions appear to violate federal law, which prohibits private citizens from trying to defeat the measures of the United States. You know, like Trump did with the whole Taiwan escapade. Like Trump did pissing and moaning about the UN resolution. And the choice that the United States made as an official act of foreign policy to abstain from that vote. As John Farrell, who has an upcoming biography of Nixon, said, in a conversation with the Republican Senator Everett Dirksen, the minority leader, Johnson lashed out at Nixon. I'm reading their hand, Everett, Johnson told his old friend. This is treason. I know, Dirksen said mournfully. But of course, I guess we can stomach treason, can't we? It was dirty, dirty business. Dirty, bloody business. Monkey wrench the peace talks. But here's the fun part. This is, and I got to wrap up, but from the New York Times piece by Mr. Farrell. Nixon had entered the fall campaign with a lead over Humphrey, but the gap was closing that October. Henry A. Kissinger, then an outside Republican advisor, had called, alerting Nixon that a deal was in the works. If Johnson would halt all bombing of North Vietnam, the Soviets pledged to have Hanoi engage in constructive talks to end a war that had already claimed 30,000 American lives. But Nixon knew that if Van Thieu would stall the talks, Nixon could portray Johnson's actions as a cheap political trick. Monkey wrench it. Monkey wrench it. Welcome, 2017. Strap in, y'all. Time to go. I got to hit the road. Y'all have a great evening. Thanks for tuning in this evening. I'm awfully glad to be back. Hopefully I'll be back tomorrow, too. I'd just like to get rid of this bug. I guess you got to let it run its course. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.